in the ocean. Things I'll never know. A chance I never had. I tap the photo out of habit, maybe for luck. Maybe it's a reset to clear away the longing I feel when I look at it. We head out the front door so I can make sure I've grabbed everything from the rental car. I stop short when I glance next door. The realtor mentioned there's a kid living there. Seems there's a kid and a mum. A logical deduction, since most minors do require parental care. And this mum looks positively hot as... Wait. Settle down. I shouldn't look at my neighbour like that. I should not stare at her trim figure, her short jean shorts, her pink t-shirt, her waves of chestnut hair. I focus on the kid. I gesture to the girl heading down the steps. See? There are even kids next door. This is perfect. My son tilts his head and sends a, "What are you talking about?" look my way.
"Dad, she's 20. She's not a kid."
I arch a brow. 20? I'm pretty sure she's not 20. I bet she's 11, I say, peering at the young lady. I mean, 11 is possible, right? I wave, and they both wave back, and I do not stare at the mum. I do not watch as she walks down the stone path in their front lawn, a sway to her hips, a soft smile on her face. I do not gaze at her every step.
"On what planet is she 11?
Ethan asks as they come closer. "The planet of 11-year-olds?" I toss back. Fine. Maybe he's right that she's not 11. But she's not 20.
"Look, all I'm saying..."
As the pair turns toward my house, I swat his arm. Stand up straighter. "They're coming over. Act normal."
"You act normal,"
he hisses. "I'm always normal."
"You're so not normal at all,"
he counters. This kid... I swear I don't know where his cheek comes from. As I wait on the porch, I do my best not to drink in the sight in front of me. Because my new next-door neighbor is a fox. And sexy neighbors are incredibly off-limits. Sexy neighbors are at the top of the list of forbidden fruit. Right along with employees, friends of your sister, and ex-girlfriends of your mates. I've never set foot in any of those dangerous territories, and I don't intend to start now.
"Hi there!"
she calls as she heads up the path, and I walk down the steps to meet her. Them. Both of them. "Hello there. Nice to meet you, neighbor." I pat myself on the back for sounding thoroughly amiable, and not at all like a guy in a bar chatting up a luscious lady. Her smile is radiant, highlighting the constellation of freckles that covers her nose and her light blue eyes that sparkle. Damn, she's quite pretty close up, too. I extend a hand, and we shake. "Hi. I'm Liam. I just bought this house, which I suppose is obvious because I am moving into it. Because that's what you do with homes you've just bought. You move into them." "Okay. Yeah, that's blatantly obvious too. I swear I've spoken to women before. I've spent most of my 20s and plenty of my 30s speaking to women. I don't know why it's suddenly weird to speak to this woman. Maybe it has something to do with the tattoos running down her arms, or the work boots on her feet. Or the hammer in her front pocket. Of course, a hammer shouldn't make it difficult to speak to a woman, but it does make me curious. In any case, it's nice to meet you." She smiles, a grin that should be gracing toothpaste tubes.
"It's a pleasure to meet you too. I'm January. This is my daughter, Wednesday. She's 15, going on 20.
Ethan shoots me an "I told you so" look as I shake Wednesday's hand, then introduce my nearly 10-year-old. Ethan shakes hands with both women, then says to Wednesday, all tough,
"I don't need a babysitter. I wasn't going to offer to babysit," she says. "I have a job." "Cool. Just letting you know,"
he says, acting so nonchalant.
"What's your job?" "I'm a hacker. I hack into my neighbor's accounts."
January's jaw drops.
"Wednesday!"
Her daughter grins wickedly.
"Sorry. Just kidding."
January sets a hand on Wednesday's shoulder.
"She's a little sassy, a little sarcastic."
"Fortunately, we're fluent in sarcasm," I say. January wipes her free hand across her forehead.
"Phew, we are so not hackers. But we are vegetarians, so I brought you a few things from our garden."
Peering into the basket, I catch sight of radishes, and I flinch. Ethan smacks my arm, chuckling. January's brow knits, and her daughter laughs.
"I told you,"
Wednesday whispers.
"The new brown."
Ethan points at me.
He hates veggies.
He peers into the basket.
He hates radishes the most.
And the lovely brunette winces.
Shoot. Really?
That's a cringe. That's most definitely a cringe.
He really, really hates them,
Ethan says, digging me deeper into the hole. Wednesday raises a hand.
I told her no one wants veggies as a gift, especially radishes or cilantro. Do you hate cilantro too?
January asks, the cringe factor still high. It's not that I hate cilantro per se, I say, trying for diplomacy.
He thinks it tastes like soap, and it does,
Ethan says. I like soap, I put in, as if that makes things better.
Soap is good,
January says. Wednesday smiles and offers Ethan a hand for high-fiving.
But who wants to eat soap? Not me,
he says, then points to the back of the house.
I have a pool. Want to see it? Sure.
In seconds, they disappear, heeding the siren call of chlorinated water as I stand on the porch with a basket of veggies I won't eat and my sexy new neighbor with her work boots, tattoos, and that smile I want to kiss off. But I won't, because she is off limits. Kissing the smile off of one's neighbor's face isn't neighborly behavior at all.
Sorry about the radishes, she says. I guess they are the new brown, rather than the new black.
I completely appreciate the gesture, though, I say warmly, so she'll know that flinching at the first sight of radishes isn't what defines me as a person.
There are flowers in there, too, she offers, and a bar of homemade soap.
Because I smell? I deadpan. She chuckles.
I was worried you'd say that.
Oh, I can take a hint. But as I mentioned, I do like soap. I peer into the basket, a smile tugging at my lips as I spot the daisies. Ah, my favorite flowers. My mum likes these.
And the flowers remind you of your mom. I'm batting zero today,
she says, a little forlorn. I furrow my brow. I like my mum, so it's a compliment.
Oh.
Does that surprise you?
No. Yes. I don't know.
I laugh. Sorry. The gifts are lovely. She laughs and gives an easy shrug.
Most men don't admit to liking their moms. Also, you can feed the radishes and cilantro to the local raccoons if you'd like.
Actually, raccoons are also not the best market for offerings of cilantro.
They're not?
No. They like nuts, seeds, fruits, eggs, insects, frogs, and crayfish, I answer seriously. She deals me an inquisitive stare.
Are you a raccoonologist?
Sort of, I say. I'm a vet.
I'm a carpenter.
My eyebrows rise as I point to her pocket. That would explain the hammer in your pocket.
Oh, no. The hammer is for when I lock you up in my basement.
I play along. I was hoping you'd be game for that. Wanna go now? She laughs.
Actually, my daughter told me the best housewarming gift would be to offer to hang pictures or art for you. And as is the case with most things in life, she was right.
Hold on. You're saying I get soap, flowers for mum, and your picture-hanging expertise?
You left out the radishes and cilantro.
No, I just didn't get to them yet. They're for the raccoons. I'll leave them out tonight for the bandits.
Then I want a report tomorrow,
she says. For a second, I simply stand there, enjoying, much more than I should, the unexpected, delightful view of my gorgeous neighbor. My off-limits neighbor. Must not consider her an option for the dating plan. I glance around, trying to think of something else to do than stare at her lovely face. Want to see the inside?
I would love to.
I show her into the house as two guys leave the bedroom and pull a mirror from a box.
Any idea where you want this, sir?
One of the guys asks. I glance around, not quite sure. You can just leave it against the wall. January lifts her chin, nodding at the guy.
Hey, Joshua. How's Maggie? She just turned one, right?
She's walking now,
the guy says with a pleased-as-punch grin.
Excellent. I bet she's a handful.
And we love it.
Then he addresses me, pointing to the front door.
We're going to grab some more things. Almost done. You don't have much.
I'm a minimalist, I say.
Cool,
the guy says and strides out. I turn to see January has a hand on the leather couch, and she's nodding knowingly.
I notice you've got a whole man pad vibe going on here.
You think so? I ask. as if the thought never occurred to me.
I mean, it's hard to tell with all the black, white, and chrome. But if I had to guess...
What do you know? Seems I do. Then I shrug. Honestly, I think it might be time to ditch it.
You don't like the look?
It seems... impractical, I say, gesturing to the yard to indicate the kid. I was thinking when we left New York that maybe it was time to torch all the furniture.
Go furniture free. Sleep on the floor.
I laugh. No, I meant finally get something that doesn't scream, I'm single. An eyebrow lifts.
Are you not single?
I am definitely single. Very much so. But I don't think I need the whole black and white and chrome look anymore. She peers around my monochromatic home.
Yeah, there is definitely a bachelor aesthetic working here.
Tell me about it. Even my son has black bedding. We don't own anything that isn't black or white.
What about gray? Do you have anything gray?
I screw up the corner of my lips, considering. We might have a few gray items, but gray is just a variation. New Yorkers aren't actually allowed to own furniture that's not black and white.
Ooh,
she says with an exaggerated nod.
I've heard, too, that single men are limited to items made only of chrome, steel, or titanium.
Don't forget iron. That's a very manly substance. And we like to have lots of iron tables, spikes, and stakes.
So manly.
She glances again at my black furniture, at my glass table, at the entirely colorless scheme that doesn't fit in this bright yellow bungalow.
Are you truly thinking of going furniture shopping?
Yes, but I fear I might never emerge from IKEA. I've heard tell of a secret fast track to the exits, known only to the most experienced shoppers. The rest of us have to follow the winding trail like sheep, and somehow I always get caught behind a slow-moving family with all day to shop when all I want is a desk lamp. She stands and brushes her hands over the front of her shorts.
Why don't I give you a better housewarming gift? I can take you shopping, Liam.
For furniture? You'd do that? She smiles.
You're my neighbor, of course. It just so happens that I know the secret route through IKEA. Also, it only seems fair, because I hate your furniture as much as you hate radishes.
Is it possible to hate something that much? I counter, enjoying her sarcasm. She pats the couch.
Yup, I detest it.
Well, my furniture is the new brown.
Then I'll be your furniture Sherpa. Are you free tomorrow?
As a bird, I reply, and she laughs.
Ah, a vet who makes bird jokes. I'm sure that wins you many clients.
I laugh too, a bit surprised at how well this move is going so far. That is, if living next door to a pretty, sarcastic, helpful woman I'd love to ask on a date but can't is a good thing. But I can make the best of it. I'll be friends with the world's sexiest neighbor with a tool belt and short shorts. That ought to be easy. Said no one, ever. Chapter 5. Liam. As I turn the rental car onto a curving road in neighboring Lucky Falls, Ethan tosses out yet another option for a permanent set of wheels.
Hovercraft? That slaps. Have you considered it?
I have not. Tell me why it slaps, I say, filing that new slang away in my drawer of things kids say these days. Because I'm totally open to a dope hovercraft, but I need to know exactly why that should be at the top of my list. Why should it be above, say, a Subaru? He rolls his eyes and huffs, possibly puffs, with the disdain of youth.
Please tell me you're not getting a Subaru, Dad.
I maintain a straight face as I drive. Why should I not get a Subaru? Isn't that what dads do? I could also get white trainers and a braided leather belt. He recoils in the seat, a full body shudder I catch in my peripheral vision.
No, just no. That is, you can't come home if you do that. Also, just call them sneakers.
Yo, sneakers. How's that?
Sort of better.
I laugh. So tell me more about the hovercraft and why it's better than a Subaru. He taps his fingers on the dashboard, full of energy.
Because they're cool. Reason enough.
Flipping the turn signal, I slow at the corner. Cool is, indeed, reason enough.
Then can we get a Bugatti?
Sure. Want to buy it today?
Yes!
As we slow at a fork in the road, I wiggle the fingers of my right hand. Crack open the piggy bank then and fork over some coin. Do you know what they cost? He arches an I have no clue brow.
A few thousand?
I point high up. A little higher.
$100,000.
My hand stretches toward the ceiling of the car.
$1,000,000.
Something like that. He glances out the window for a moment, then back at me.
Then how about a Batmobile? Maybe we should just get one of those.
Why didn't I think of that? As we near my parents' house, his expression turns serious for a second, earnest.
I have something to tell you.
What do you have to tell me? I ask, keeping it light but feeling cautious, in case this is the moment when he confesses that he hates this move.
It's weird seeing you drive.
Laughing, I answer him. It's weird to drive. I didn't drive for years in New York.
I never once saw you drive in the city. Wait, did you drive that time we went to St. Lucia?
No, that was your butler. Of course that was me. Who else do you think drove us? He shrugs helplessly.
I don't remember.
Well, it was me, I say as I turn into my parents' driveway. Your father.
You drive really slow.
It's safer. Also, driving is like eating radishes.
You hate it.
So incredibly much. It's the worst.
You should just get a bike then. Well, another bike. You can't use your racing bike,
he says. True. My racing bike is for just that. Though I don't race to place in the centuries I train for. I race for exercise, to hit goals and for the accomplishment, to crest 5 mountain passes, traversing 100 miles in a mere 8 hours. Or something like that. So just a regular bike, I ask. A tooling around town bike.
Yeah, you should do that, since you like to ride and so do I.
That's not a bad idea. A bike sounds kind of perfect. I cut the engine and look at him. Should we go bike shopping together later? He shrugs happily.
Works for me.
It's almost too easy, the way this move is working for him. But I want to make sure he's okay with all the changes. Hey, I say, setting a hand on his arm.
Yeah?
You're doing okay with everything. With being here. With missing New York. He nods, but there's still a hint of sadness in the curve of his mouth.
Sometimes I miss Florida, too.
Do you remember much about it? I ask, bracing myself for whatever he might tell me. There was a long span of time when he missed his old life terribly.
No, but I remember I liked it there.
He waves toward my parents' house.
But I like it here, too, because of Nan and Pop and everything else and the baseball camp I'm going to and the pool and Spencer,
he says, naming one of his cousins. Good. I punch him lightly on the arm.
And because we can adopt a dog now, right?
Ah, there it is. He's wanted a dog for as long as he's been in my life. But my place in New York was pet-free. Do you miss Katrina? I ask. That's the dog his mum had when he was younger. She told me as much when she showed up. He likes books, baseball, and dogs. He'll eat nearly anything, but he does love sweets. Don't give him too many. He falls asleep instantly at night, so make time to read during the day. Use a nightlight, since that's what he's accustomed to. Also, he still misses Katrina, an Australian cattle dog mix I had who went to the Rainbow Bridge last year. And he likes to talk and to laugh. That's about it. Oh, one more thing. He might be a fish. You'll never get him out of the water once you let him in. That's what she told me. The care and feeding of the son I never knew I had. I've been ready for the dog request ever since I told him we'd be living in a house and not a flat.
I don't remember Katrina,
Ethan says.
But that picture of her and me makes me think I liked her a lot. So, I want another.
It will be after school starts, but the answer is yes. Fact is, I'd like one too. Because dogs. Also because it's about fucking time. I won't have to wonder what the days were like when he hugged a dog, threw a ball to a dog, or played with a dog. I'll see them all, experience them all. Something I didn't have before. Something I want desperately.
Yes!
He pumps a fist.
I love it here, then!
Perhaps that's the joy of being his age. You're not too entrenched in your life. You're still open to change. You're malleable and flexible. And you're still wildly confident, enough to walk up to peers, determined to be friends. It's harder when you're a little older. As I stare at my parents' red home with white shutters and window planters, a crest of nostalgia clobbers me like a rogue wave in the ocean, slamming into me out of the blue. It sweeps me back in time, to when I was an angsty and emo 16-year-old, forced to relocate from England to the States, because my father had landed a chance to teach at a veterinary school here and practice in the States as well. Such an opportunity for him, but hell for me. I'd lived in the same small town in Surrey my entire life, and the last thing I'd wanted was to move 6,000 miles away to a small town in California. I'd hated being uprooted, so I'd handled it by tucking into my room, slamming the door and blasting bands like The Cure and The Smiths. I'd worn black and cultivated an air of fuck-off world. I went on like that for months, head down, teeth gnashing, thoroughly pissed off. Until an outgoing girl with frizzy brown hair and big green glasses noticed my scores on science tests and invited me to join the science club. The club members figured out I was uncannily good at all things chemical and biological, plus numbers and data as well, and they recruited me. For experiments, for projects, for general geeking out. At last, I had found my people. Fellow animal lovers, science geeks, and book nerds. Some of them are still here in Lucky Falls, one town over from Duck Falls, but some have scattered to San Francisco. Others are farther afield across the United States. Some of them I'll no doubt see in the coming weeks and months. Others I may never see again. But even so, meeting them, realizing my strengths, started me down the path I'm on today. The glass half full one. The optimistic one. The found what I want to do in life path. The one where I followed in my father's footsteps. That's what I'm doing now. Only it's a little bit harder this time. Because everything is harder for him. And it's becoming more so by the day. He can no longer run his practice, and he's kept that fact under wraps. That's why the realtor kept my name confidential. If it got out that I was the one who had nabbed the house, Liam Harris, DVM, son of Edward Harris, DVM, word would spread around both towns that my father was no longer able to tend to their furry friends. That truth will come out in a few more days, but on our terms, when we can formally announce the takeover, and I can answer any client questions and assuage their fears and concerns. Now my mother rushes out the front door, chased by her two border collie mutts, black and white blurs of bounding paws and thumping tails. Ethan jumps out of the car, drops to the ground, and offers his face for kissing. Being dogs, Elphaba and Galinda seize the chance to lick his cheeks, lips, and eyes. "Make sure they clean your teeth too," I say as he laughs and falls to the grass, letting the dogs conduct a thorough tongue-lashing, like I bet Katrina did to him back in Florida.
"Girls, come now," my mum calls. "Off!"
"Too late." I shut the car door and head toward her. "He slathered himself with steak this morning."
"Well, he's won their allegiance for the rest of time, then," mum says.
Seconds later, Ethan pops up and gives her a hug.
"Why, if it isn't my fifth favorite grandson," she declares, and he cracks up. "Why can't I be first?" he asks.
She parks a hand on her hip, taps her chin, and seems to seriously consider his question.
"Maybe you can, but you'll have to prove why you should be my favorite."
As the dogs circle his feet, he stares at her weather-worn face, her blonde hair gone silver, her blue eyes still bright and knowing. He has her jeans, her fair complexion.
"What do I have to do to become your favorite?"
She peers around the yard.
"You could start by mowing the lawn, then perhaps by weeding it."
I join them, thoroughly approving of her tough tactics.
"You drive a hard bargain, Mum."
"Of course I do," she says, ruffling my hair.
I bend to pet the dogs, paying homage to their adorableness. Then I point a finger at each one, and instantly they drop into proper sits.
"You're the dog wizard,"
Ethan sounds a little awed.
"And if I'm not, they should take away my license."
Mum flashes me a smile.
"It's good to see you again, Liam."
"You saw us the other night," I point out.
"And I still like seeing you. Didn't anyone ever tell you to be nice to your mum?"
I roll my eyes. I am nice. I'll show you how nice. I head to the back seat of the car, open the door, and reach inside to grab the bouquet of daisies. I offer them to her, and she clasps her hand to her chest in delight, and then takes the flowers.
I love them. They're from the woman next door,
Ethan chimes in. He drops the mic after that and scampers into the house, the girls behind him, nipping at his feet.
You've already met someone.
My mother arches a tell-me-all-the-details brow. I've met my next-door neighbor.
A woman?
I stare off into the sky, bright and blue. Yes, that does seem to be her gender, it's true.
And you have your eye on her already?
I chuckle, shaking my head. A lie. A big lie. A big fat lie. She's just my next-door neighbor. I don't know why you would say I have my eye on her.
Because you've always had your eye on pretty women, she says.
Busted. Her eyes shoot laser beams my way.
I'd like more grandchildren, so please get moving on that.
Be grateful for what you have. I didn't even plan on giving you this one, but it worked out quite well, didn't it? Stop being so difficult, I tease, planting a quick kiss on her forehead. Would you take a grand dog instead? She swats my shoulder.
I swear, you and your sisters, always so quick.
So that's a yes to a rescue dog?
Excellent.
Shaking her head, she deals me a stern stare.
And so when are you going to see this neighbor again?
I don't know. Probably all the time because she's my next door neighbor. I look at my watch, then answer a little sheepishly. Also in about 30 minutes because we're going furniture shopping. As I say that, a little zip of excitement whips through me. I hate shopping. I loathe shopping for furniture. And I detest IKEA. But I'm absolutely looking forward to going furniture shopping with January.
Shopping,
my mother says, as if it's a naughty word. It's just furniture shopping, I point out. She gives me the satisfied smile that only a mother can dole out.
It's furniture shopping now, but in no time she'll be knocked up and popping out more babies for me, okay?
I hold up a hand. I don't even think I can speak to you any longer. Then I sober as I shift to another subject, the reason I'm here. How's Dad? Her mood cracks and sinks into sadness, but then she gamely tries to buoy up her emotions, pasting on a smile.
He's okay,
she says in a chipper voice that sounds forced.
He's doing well enough. He had an appointment this morning to prep for the surgery next month.
Is he ready? That surgery is part of why I'm here. A big part. She swallows roughly, but her voice is steady.
Some days he's all zen and accepts it. Other days he rages against the machine.
And which one is he today?
Today he's simply happy that he's going to spend time with Ethan. We all enjoy that. And on that note, why don't you go see your lady friend for your IKEA date?
That's not what it is, I say. But I do pop inside and say hi to my father and bye to my son before I take off to meet my next-door neighbor for our definitely not a date. Chapter 6. Liam. January waits for me, leaning against the cab of her pink truck, looking sexy as sin and sweet as ice cream. Because, damn, there's just something about a woman with ink who drives a pickup truck. She tosses the keys in the air and catches them, dealing me a serious gut-check sort of stare.
I've got supplies. Are you ready?
I screw up the corner of my lips, tapping my chin. Let's see. I pat the pocket of my jeans. I've got some rations, a leather man, and a blueprint of the store that I found online. She opens the door of her truck.
Perfect. I've got a camper stove, too. Just in case.
Are you a fan of camping?
I am. And judging from the look on your face, you're not?
What look exactly? She circles her finger, pointing at my face.
The slight crinkle of your nose combined with just a touch of recoil.
Sounds like a recipe. I pretend I'm reading a cookbook. Start with a dollop of dislike, then toss in a dash of derision and a sprinkle of disdain. There you go. A well-done grin glides across her face.
So you admit you have a secret I-hate-camping face?
Oh, was it a secret? I ask with a deadpan expression. According to you, it was readily apparent. Shaking her head in amusement, she points to the passenger side.
Get in, radish-hating, camping-hating, comfy-furniture-hating neighbor.
Before I make my way around the truck, I hold open the door for her. After you, furniture Sherpa. She lifts her eyebrows approvingly as she hops into the cab.
Thank you. Very gentlemanly of you.
Yes, but it's also strategic. Gives me a chance to admire her backside. She has a great ass, and I enjoy lovely views. So I'm not that gentlemanly. Closing the door behind her, I head to the passenger side, get in, and snap on my seatbelt. I peer into the bed of the truck as if I'm checking out her survival supplies. The bed of her truck is actually empty. Pristine, too, as if newly cleaned. Is there a tent that goes along with this camper stove of yours, in case we're stuck overnight? She scoffs as she turns on the engine.
Don't be silly. We can just curl up in a king-size bed and catch our Z's in the bedroom section, if we want.
Oh, did she just go there? To flirty and dirty land? I believe she did. And I do believe I liked it. Maybe too much, though. That's the trouble. She's sarcastic, friendly, helpful, and sexy as hell, but also completely ineligible. I have to remember she's my next-door neighbor. She's exactly who I can't pursue in my efforts to find Mrs. Wright, to provide for Ethan what I was lucky enough to have growing up, a stable, steady family. Even though we moved continents, even though it was hard as hell at first, I was lucky to have two parents who looked out for me, who talked to me, who gave me everything I needed to become the person I wanted to be. Now I want to give my son everything I experienced, and I know he misses having a mum. But that won't be January. She won't be Mrs. Wright. She can only be Ms. Next Door. Anything else would be foolish, because if we didn't work out, she'd be a stone's throw away. That would be awkward, possibly uncomfortable, potentially as agonizing as trying to use a PC when you're used to a Mac. And there's the kid factor. Ethan could get attached, and that spells trouble too. He doesn't need another loss in his life. That makes my neighbor thoroughly off limits. First things first, once I settle into my new home and new job, I can start this whole dating for keeps business in earnest and approach it with stealth so that Ethan doesn't meet her before we're solid as a rock. Which means I'm simply going to embrace having a next-door neighbor who's fun, easygoing, and tempting as hell. That's especially true as she stretches her arm across the back of my seat and twists to look behind her, giving me a view of the sparrows on her right arm. They fly down her shoulder, soar across her biceps, and curl around to below her elbow. The ink is delicate, feminine, and impossible to look away from. What do they mean? Why did she get them? And does she have more ink that's hidden from my view? I shake away my wayward thoughts. How do you want to tackle this shopping expedition today? Besides forging our own path and refusing to be funneled through the endless retail labyrinth.
I have my plan of attack. I wrote a task list. It's like a schedule and has water breaks and even snack times,
she says as she puts the truck in drive. Are we talking pirate's booty type snacks? Or more like apple slices and peanut butter?
Please. After yesterday, I'm never giving you fresh food again. It's pirate's booty all the way for you, mister.
She turns down the next road.
And don't forget, if we get lost or confused in the store, or we just can't find our way out, we can always call for help.
I rub my finger against my ear. What did you just say? Call for help? She groans.
Oh, you're one of those guys. The kind who doesn't believe in asking for help.
I thump my chest, playing up the stereotype to egg her on. I'm a man. I'm not allowed to ask for help.
Anyone can ask for help, she says,
a touch worked up and a touch adorable. Then it's a good thing you'll be there in case someone needs to do it. Laughing will ruin the pretense that this is a sticking point for me, so I keep a straight face. She arches a dubious brow.
Would you really not ask for help? What's so wrong with that? Nice guys ask for help when they need it.
I roll my eyes, continuing the ruse. Great, now you think I'm a nice guy. Just fucking great.
Don't put words in my mouth. I didn't say you were nice. I asked if you'd really refuse to ask for help.
By your logic, nice guys ask for help. So if you expect me to do it, you must think I'm... I curl my lip in exaggerated disdain. Nice.
She glances my way, a sly little smirk on her pretty face. You're saying you want to be a mean guy.
I'm saying even nice guys don't want to be called nice guys.
So you don't want to be a mean guy. You don't want to be a nice guy. And you're prepared to wander forever through IKEA rather than ask for help.
I'm losing the battle against laughter. You're really good at talking, aren't you? She flashes me a victorious grin.
It's kind of my thing.
I laugh, enjoying the moment. I confess, I'm 100% fine with asking for help. But it is my goal to make it out of the store without needing to, and I always try to exceed my goals. With a smile, she turns on the blinker and says,
Here's to exceeding goals today, then.
As she turns onto the highway, I gesture toward the hood of her truck, making conversation. Big fan of pink. She turns to me briefly, her eyes glimmering.
I am. I'm all about leaning into it.
I laugh at the way she put that. Leaning into the whole Lady Carpenter thing. Her brows shoot up, like she can't believe I said that.
Thing? A Lady Carpenter thing? First of all, it's not a thing. It's a profession.
Perhaps I didn't phrase that the best way. Before I can backtrack, she adds,
Unless you want me to start referring to you as Liam the male vet, should I do that?
She's called me out so delightfully that I have to laugh. May I humbly suggest Liam the male vet who just put his foot in his mouth? She tusks, but with humor.
How does it fit in there? You manage the whole shoe in up to the ankle.
I pretend to talk with my mouth full.
Not much room for pirate's booty.
You don't deserve booty of any kind, she says.
I choke, and her smirk turns into another I win grin. But joking aside, I take a breath to explain and make proper amends. The way I said that was unfortunate, and I'm sorry. I meant it more as a compliment. The uniqueness of being a woman in your field. The coolness of it. I get the sense that you embrace it for what it is, with the pink hammer and truck and all that. And really, I should have said, I bet you're great with a hammer.
Points for not going with the obvious.
At my inquiring look, she quotes,
I bet you like to get nailed.
Ouch. I grimace in sympathy. Please tell me no one says that. She laughs.
No, they don't, actually. Because I know how to work a power saw.
I shudder, raising my hands as if to ward her off.
Anyway, she says, nice recovery. Very well done.
She takes a beat, then adds,
Maybe you're a mildly nice guy.
There is nothing mild about me, I say with narrowed eyes and a deliberate growl that makes her laugh.
Actually, I have to agree. You're not milquetoast at all.
I've always aspired to not be milquetoast.
You're exceeding that goal, too. And to answer your question, yes, I love pink. I'm going to do a whole accent wall in my house in pink. Now that I finally can.
There's a story in the way she ends that sentence. Before I can ask about it, she tosses a question to me instead.
What do you think of Duck Falls so far?
I actually went to high school one town over. In Lucky Falls, I say. She glances briefly at me in surprise, then says,
I want to hear all about that.
The rest of the drive, we chat about how I came to America as a teen, then again in my late 20s. And I figure there'll be time on the way back to learn about her and why she's finally able to indulge in that accent wall when she couldn't before.
Chapter 7. January. The store is 45 miles away from Duck Falls. Normally, I'm all about efficiency. As a single mom and a small business owner trying to make a dent in a male-dominated field, I don't have a lot of time to mess around, and I don't have a lot of time for myself. Hell, self-care is something I have to schedule, my phone beeping with nightly reminders to lotion up my feet with coconut body cream. Then I'll drag a pair of fluffy socks out of the drawer and pull them on for bed, all while Alva and I text about her day at the salon and mine tooling around town. That's the extent of my maintenance routine. Texting my best friend while making sure my feet don't get all cracked. I don't have time to amble around, by my lonesome or with anyone else. But Wednesday's off with Alva's daughter, Audrey, working on YouTube videos where they sample quirky food like grape gum and bento boxes. Meanwhile, I'm enjoying all 45 inefficient miles in my neighbor's company as he tells me about going to high school in neighboring Lucky Falls before he returned to England for university and vet school, then came back to the States in his late 20s. Which explains why his British accent is still so yummy and British. So you were going to high school in Lucky Falls while I was in Duck Falls, I remark. Small world.
Are you thinking we would have run into each other at the football games?
I toss him a doubtful look. Why do I think you didn't attend football games?
Are you casting aspersions on my sportiness or lack thereof?
I flick the fingers of my right hand at him as I drive. I am indeed aspersions cast. He huffs, folding his arms over his chest.
Fine. I didn't go to football games.
Neither did I, say with a wide grin, offering a palm for a high five. He unfolds his arms and smacks back.
Is this a Geeks Unite thing? Or Science Geeks, to be precise.
I laugh. I was more into woodshop and theater tech. So maybe it's more like Woodshop Tomboys and Science Geeks Unite.
All right, fair enough. Tomboys and geeks. So that explains why we never ran into each other. But what year did you graduate?
I tell him, and he reciprocates. The arithmetic is easy to figure. You're 39? I ask.
So old. And you're 22?
Is that your way of making up for the Lady Carpenter thing?
Did it work?
Perhaps. I say, then I whisper, even though I'm 37.
Yes, I've figured that out since we were 2 years apart in school.
A math geek, too, I say dryly. So impressive. A little later, we arrive at IKEA, where I put on my most serious face. I wrote a list. I have a plan. I'm ready. His brow knits in confusion.
You planned out what I need to buy?
I did, I say, owning it. That's part of the housewarming gift. It didn't seem like something you wanted to do. He brings his hand to his chest and sighs dramatically.
You are an angel of mercy.
Just wait until your sink clogs or your dryer goes on the fritz. You'll elevate me to goddess status when I can come fix it for you.
I'm promoting you right now just for offering January.
As we march into the store, a determined spring in both our steps, he lifts a brow.
Speaking of January, how is it that you and your daughter have such similar names?
Well, it may have something to do with the fact that she's my daughter and I got to name her. He laughs as we step onto the escalator.
I meant, was it as deliberate as it seems, you being named after a month and her after a day of the week? But I suppose that's my answer.
I always liked the name Wednesday. I suppose I don't mind either when things match.
You say that like it's a confession. Like matching things are near and dear to your heart.
They are. Wine and chocolate, coffee and cream, hammer and nail. And now, January and Wednesday.
If she has children, do you think they'll be named minute or second?
At the top of the escalator, we turn into the linen section. Please, don't be silly. If she gives me a grandchild, I'll insist on the name 5 o'clock.
Because that's the best time of day.
My favorite time of the day is actually 10 at night. I slow my pace, tapping my chin. No, probably 11. I love the quiet of nighttime.
You're a night owl,
he says, musing on this newly learned fact. I am. And what about you? Are you a morning person?
What do you think?
He flashes me a grin. The way the man alternates between droll and cheery is kind of adorable. You seem like a morning person.
And why do you say that?
He asks as he follows me through the kitchenware. I think it's because you have this sort of upbeat personality. He exaggerates a grimace.
Don't tell anybody. I really want to keep up my reputation as a ne'er-do-well or a curmudgeon.
You're doing a horrible job of pretending to be either of those.
I'm working on it. In the meantime, like I said, don't tell anyone.
I bring my finger to my lips, swearing secrecy. Then I focus on the shopping list. After all, I am a woman on a mission. a couch mission. We make our way through housewares, stopping only at an adorable steel trash can that's so cute I have to grab a pink one. Penchant for pink, I explain.
And pink trash cans are irresistible.
Clearly. He holds out his arm, silently offering to carry it. I hand it over, thanking him. Next, we come to shelves and bins full of pillows, and I slow, then stop, because pillows. I wiggle my fingers at them. Must have pillows. He lifts a brow, looking perplexed.
You need pillows.
I want pillows, I correct. Don't let the whole tomboy vibe throw you. I am big on pillows.
What's not to like? They're soft and fluffy, and they help lubricate the path to sleep.
A laugh springs from my chest. I don't really think of pillows as lubrication.
Oh, that's an issue then. Pillows are absolutely a lubricant. I highly recommend them for easing into a good night's sleep.
I sleep quite well.
Do you sleep on pillows?
I do sleep on pillows.
Then the lubricant is doing its job, isn't it?
Fine, fine. I surrender with a laugh. You got me there.
You are the girliest tomboy,
he remarks as I grab a sparkly purple one. I am. We go to the couches, and my gears start whirring. I recommend a dark blue one for him. He approves it instantly. Tables next. I suggest a simple wood one for him, and he says,
I'll get it.
He's easy, so easy, that when we reach the chairs, I can't resist patting a strange egg-shaped one with a pull-down shade so you can hide inside it. And this seems like your style. You can use it as a chair fort. His brow lifts.
Just the thing every man needs.
Of course. Didn't you see GQ's list of top 10 things a manly man needs? Scotch, an old-fashioned shave kit, and a chair fort. Stroking his chin, he makes a show of thinking it over.
Afraid I missed that one. I trust your judgment, but I'd better try it out to be sure.
He crouches and inserts himself into the egg, then tugs the cover down, turning the chair into a kind of capsule. Laughter threads through me. Is it everything you've ever wanted in a chair?
My God, this is bloody fantastic. Give me a book and I'll never leave.
When he slides open the cover, I have my phone ready and snap a pic.
I can only presume that you're going to file that under future blackmail material.
It's like you know me so well already. We move along, choosing a different chair, a simple one that's durable too. We head to the nearest clerk at the checkout, handing over the tags for the items.
Do you want home delivery for these?
He asks.
Absolutely,
Liam says.
And would you like assembly?
Liam says yes, but I override him. He doesn't. He shoots me a look.
I can put a dog's leg back together, but I can't assemble a chair from instructions. And see, I'm not afraid to ask for help when I need it.
I grin at his honesty, but assure him, I want to do it. It's part of the housewarming gift. Just another perk of living next door to a carpenter goddess.
Thank you. That would be amazing,
he says to me, then finishes with the clerk. He also insists on buying my pillows and trash can, and I let him. As he grabs the bag of pillows, my stomach rumbles. Liam doesn't pretend he doesn't hear, which seems in keeping with his straightforward nature.
You should let me feed you,
he says. I won't object to that. We duck into the store cafe where I grab a salad, he grabs a sandwich, and we find a table next to a family. The mom is offering a meatball to the little blonde toddler across from her, the girl opening her mouth wide as the mom airplanes the food into it. The dad, or so I assume, plates a scoop of mashed potatoes for the young boy across from him. Like a seagull, the boy dips a fork in, declares yum, and his dad laughs. They look tired, but happy. Across from me, Liam looks contemplative as he takes a bite of his sandwich, studying me as he chews.
So, at the risk of being blunt, is Wednesday's father dead? Did he pass away? Is he out of the picture?
I put down my fork and wipe the napkin across my mouth. You are straightforward, aren't you?
Yes, I try to be. Does that bother you?
I shake my head. I like it. Most people aren't.
Why tiptoe when you can be blunt, as I like to say?
Words to live by, I agree. I set my hands on the table, thinking about where to begin the story. It's not one I'm ashamed of. It's my own, and there's no reason not to tell him. Wednesday was an oopsie with my college boyfriend on graduation night. Things were sort of petering out with us, but then I found out I was pregnant. And so we got married, because that's what you do. We stayed together for a while, but it was mostly out of obligation. I wish things had been different with Vince, but it was never really in the cards. He and I tried. We definitely tried. But there was no spark, no deep, soulful connection. We were partners in parenting and partners in navigating life. We weren't partners in love. A few years ago, we made plans to amicably separate. He met someone else almost immediately and moved to Texas to marry her. He's not terribly involved with Wednesday, just sees her during the summers. I smile, and it's genuine. I want my daughter to spend time with her father. He's a good man who loves his kid. Just not the right man for me, and I wasn't right for him. He smiles softly.
It's kind of amazing that you say that.
I snort. Not really.
Lovely sound of derision, by the way.
Thanks. I've been working on it for years, hoping someone would notice.
Achievement unlocked.
Then he returns to his point.
It's amazing because so many people talk about their ex like they're the worst person in the universe. He was a total twat. He didn't appreciate me. She was borderline insane. She clung to me like static to laundry.
He says, and I laugh at the last one.
But it takes a lot to be honest and admit that you weren't right for each other.
We weren't, and trust me, I wish we had been. I wish it had been love, hearts, and lots of banging on the kitchen counter like my friend Alva and her hubs. He laughs deeply and wiggles his brow.
So your friend is a kitchen fucker?
It's my turn to crack up. Yes, or at least she likes to tell me about all the places she and Marcos get it on, like the staircase or the bathroom sink or the storage trunk in the attic. He arches one brow.
Storage trunk in the attic?
Yeah, I don't quite get that one either. I decided not to ask.
Some things you may just not want to know.
They were high school sweethearts, and their first time was in the garage or something, so maybe it was nostalgic. I smile, happy for my still very much in love best friend. But Vince and I didn't have that long-term bond. When it ended, I think we were both relieved.
So it's you and Wednesday against the world over there in Duck Falls.
It is, and I like it that way. He pauses for a sip of his iced tea.
You seem pretty tough. Pretty good at holding your own.
Thanks. I think we are too. It's freeing now that it's just us. I can focus on my business, on my kid. I don't have to worry about a man, I say, relieved all over again. I'm so glad that my time is mine. My chores are for me. Glad, too, that I learned how to say fuck it to worries that had plagued me for years.
The business is growing.
Yes, I say with a smile. Just last night, after I delivered the hated vegetables, I finished fixing Betty Juniper's spice rack. She lives down the street. And I'm hoping to snag a deal to do some work for Nina Clausen at the Boba Tea Shop, but the competition is fierce.
You're fierce. I wouldn't want to go up against you,
he says. Thanks. I appreciate the compliment, though I don't tell him how long it took me to get my act together work-wise, to figure out what I actually wanted to do for a living. That I'd puttered around as a handy woman for my father's construction company for years before I figured out that I wanted to run my own business. He's now retired, having given some of his company's assets to me when I started. But old habits die hard, and it took me that long to drown out the soundtrack in my head. What if you fail? What if it doesn't work? What if you suck at it? Lowering the volume on that voice took ages and lots of tough love from my best friend. But that's not what this conversation is about. What about you and your son? Picking up my fork again, I take a bite of my salad as I shift the conversation back to him and his family.
It's kind of an interesting story.
He glances at a man pushing a stroller past us who snags a table a few feet away. Interesting how?
Interesting in the fact that I didn't even know I had a kid until he was almost seven.
He's right. That's got to be a hell of a story. Chapter 8. January.
Liam makes that admission in a light tone with a "told you it was unusual" self-awareness. It must be a complicated situation, though, and I normally like someone who can poke a little fun at himself, but not if it's a front to hide pain. That definitely sounds like a story you don't hear every day. I leave him an opening, and when he doesn't fill it, I say, "You don't have to tell me what happened, but I'd like to know." He leans back in the chair, dragging his hand across his chin. He sighs, but it's not so much that he's deciding whether to speak, but more like where to start.
10 years ago, I had, and this is not the unusual part of the story, a one-night stand. She was from England, but lived in Florida. She was in town for a conference I was attending too. We connected over a drinks thing and ended up at my place, which she left at 2 in the morning. Just slipped out of my apartment and out of my life. No, look me up if you're ever in West Palm Beach. Didn't even stay for breakfast. It was 7 years before I heard from her again.
I fear that the story is heading in an unhappy direction, and my heart sinks as Liam's expression shifts. His lips go straight, his brown eyes brimming with sadness.
She literally showed up on my doorstep, rang the bell, told me she had terminal cancer, no family, and a child who was mine.
A cold twist of sympathy pulls at me, thinking of all those tragic things falling on someone at once, especially on a child like Liam's son. I'm so sorry, Liam. That's so hard for everyone involved.
Thank you. I appreciate that,
he says. No teasing or sarcasm now. He takes my words as seriously as I mean them, and his thanks is just as earnest.